On RN, I'm Cassie McCullough, and this is The List. Now, you may not have heard of Kirsten Dunst's latest film, and that might be because it's only 2.5 minutes long. It's called Aspiration, and it takes place on the Spider-Man star's driveway. She's waiting to be picked up by a taxi, an Uber to be precise, when two girls driving past recognise her and jump out of their cars with their smartphones.
Are you Kirsten Dunst?
Yeah, that's me.
Hi, how are you? Cool.
Oh, got it.
Cool.
Do you want to talk or anything? I mean, you can ask me a question or are you curious about anything? I mean,
can you tag me? That was going to be my question, too.
You can tag people.
You can tag people. So it'll show up on my profile.
Yes, once the girls have snapped their selfies, they jump back in their car and drive off, leaving Kirsten Dunst looking bewildered and used on her driveway. It's a great little comment on the banality and inanity of the celebrity selfie, which has replaced the autograph of old. But there's also another side to selfie culture that fascinates our next guest, and that's the way selfies are being used both in Australia and around the world as a tool of political empowerment to create solidarity with stigmatised minorities. Crystal Aberdeen is currently completing her PhD on the culture of selfies and micro-celebrity at the University of Western Australia. I caught up with her recently and asked her whether selfies are no longer just about narcissism.
I'll be quite hesitant to say it did start as a culture of narcissism. I know that when selfies were first theorized and studied academically, two schools took over really quickly. So psychologists were coming in and telling us that this culture was narcissistic, people were self-absorbed, they were interested more in curating their self-representations, and then people in the business school started talking about the productive potential of selfies and marketing products. But more than that, selfies really are a cultural meme. And depending on where you are, where you're situated, and what sort of activities you're locked into, people innovate the way they use selfies to self-organize, to drive awareness and popularity for different things they stand for, and some people to drive the sale of products in the sense of social media entrepreneurs.
Essentially, you're saying that I should just take out all the value judgment about selfies from the way I'm talking about it and not call it narcissistic or self-obsessed, but merely a product of the time.
I think it's very common for people to see selfie culture as narcissistic. After all, it's one person curating their self-representation constantly and then pushing all this information online to masses to view. But to think about selfies more productively, since they're so widespread, they're cross-cultural, cross-national, they span across generations, across genders even, it's probably more useful to think about how selfies are used by different people and the meanings attached to them, more so than brushing it off as a frivolous young people activity.
Okay, yeah. So give us an example then.
I think the Occupy movement in Hong Kong was just brewing. In the first 24 hours when it sparked off, when there was the height of it, people started moving to the city, into Hong Kong Central to take pictures. Protest selfies started trending. Now, it wasn't necessarily that people were hashtagging protest selfies, but they were documenting themselves in the midst of the event. There were people who were geared up, really heavily armoured with tear gas masks, with umbrellas, with flags. And then there were people who appeared more like tourists, just situating themselves in the bustle of the activity, marking their evidence or marking their place in this time where there is a significant event happening. So there were two ways that selfie culture could be looked at here. In the latter with tourists, it was about placing themselves in a space and a glimpse of real life, marking their authority and their presence there. With the first group of the locals, that was quite visually dominating, visually grabbing for people to see selfies, not just as a narcissistic self-documentary activity, but discourse from the ground on what is actually happening, subversive to mainstream representations.
What did you make of the protests in Australia, of the Wish campaign in which women were being encouraged to post hijab selfies as a sign of solidarity with Muslim women in the country?
Now, this is not new. We've had instances where people use, let's say, the pink ribbon as a sign of breast cancer support. Or in the past, people would just turn up wearing all white or all black. But selfies, when you have someone's face up close and personal, and then self-circulated online, you're bringing in a very personal narrative behind that picture. It's no longer just a disembodied, distant, passive object, but rather your body becomes the canvas for you to portray any sentiment you have along with some captions. And these glimpses at everyday life, where you've got thousands of people who look different, but kind of take on the same aesthetic in wanting to support a movement, really grabs people just to see, you know, who is involved in this? Do I want to know what they look like? Is there anyone I know? How different do they look? What could they be saying separately, individually? And this dominance of visual culture is more grabbing than, say, a tweet that is less likely to transverse across cultures. Selfies are a very quick way to garner attention in order to show signs of solidarity and support across geographical boundaries.
There's another example of the selfie activist movement. Earlier this year, Russia banned apple imports from Poland, and Poles from all over the country were posting pictures of themselves eating apples, and it was a kind of ridicule of Putin.
I think this is particularly interesting and slightly different from, say, the hijab selfies or the Occupy selfies, because you've got here a combination of some sort of critique coupled with humour. So it's transgressive, but it's also accessible and more open to masses who are maybe not so involved with keeping up with what's happening. So these types of humorous, transgressive capitalist critiques circulate more widely across the demographic. And there are two potential possibilities here. The first was that the original discourse or the significance of this meme or this cultural unit may be diluted or watered down if people take it more to be a humorous, fun internet trend. And some people who jump on the bandwagon much later may not even be aware of how this originated. But the second way of looking at this, looking at the productive potential, is that when this spreads across more quickly and people are more curious to find out what's happening, some may or may not backtrack to find out the origins of memes. Because we know in general right now there's several memes roaming around the internet, and understanding where they originated, how to use them appropriately, more importantly, is a form of cultural knowledge that internet-savvy people will want to garner.
Well, there's a lot of work ahead. I think this is a field that could occupy you for your entire career, Crystal.
I would hope so. Hopefully it would be a long career.
Well, thanks for talking with us today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
That's Crystal Eberding. She's currently completing her PhD at the University of Western Australia, and we'll ask her for a selfie of her that we can put on our program page and you can have a look.
I'll make sure I get the best one with the best lighting just for you, Cassie.
Very good.